Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, I'm Jesse McAnally.
And I'm Andrew DeWolf.
And I'm Liz Easton.
And I welcome to Musical OG, a podcast trying to get Andrew and Liz playing musical theater.
As you can see, Jess and Andrew have become pot fiends, and I am the only sane one left. So welcome to the show. This is now my show because they can't talk.
Oh no, you're dead.
Oh no, I died suddenly for no reason. Bye!
And that is Reefer Madness. Don't smoke pot or you'll have a really good time and your friends will die.
Wait, no, your girlfriend will die.
We were both young when I first saw you.
Romeo. It's weird that we've had two Romeo and Juliet things within the last couple of months. We had Taylor Swift and now we have Reefer Madness.
Oh, yeah.
And really, like, this show has about as much of a good understanding of what Romeo and Juliet is as Taylor Swift does.
It almost feels like this is parodying the Taylor Swift version of Romeo and Juliet.
If it could do that, logically.
Yeah. It had a time machine. Nev Campbell can do that. This week we are talking about the comedy musical Reefer Madness. Cue the music.
Creeping like a communist. It's knocking at our doors, turning all our children into hooligans and whores, voraciously devouring the way things are today, savagely deflowering the good old USA. Yeah! Reefer Madness, Reefer Madness.
Reefer Madness is a musical written by Kevin Murphy with music and lyrics by Dan Studney and Kevin Murphy, based on Reefer Madness, a propaganda film by Arthur Horrell and Lawrence Mead. The off-Broadway production ran from September 15th to October 28th of 2001 at the Variety Arts Theater in New York. The plot of this musical is marijuana abuse leads a wholesome teenager and his virtuous girlfriend down the road to ruin. This is the first big outing of lyricist Kevin Murphy, who would go on to be involved in the Heathers musical and I believe Legally Blonde as well. This is not my thing. People have been recommending it to me for years. People have been throwing it at me. And even when I was younger and doing the XX, what's his name, XX stuff.
Oh, XX Nostalgia Boy, XX?
XX Nostalgia Jess.
Jess Road 69 XX, yes.
Yes, ever since then, I was also just like, this ain't for me. I don't like this. It's not my thing. However, Kevin Murphy has moved on to things I've liked in other ways. And I think that it's showing that he would find a good collaborator that matched his tone and his lyrics with Lawrence O'Keefe, because the music in this is not, it's not it for me. It's not doing it for me. It gets pretty one note, and if it weren't for Anna Gasteyer, I probably would have turned off this film a long time in. But because of course we're doing a podcast on it. Now the negative Nelly is out of the way. Andrew, Liz, go ahead.
So I don't know much about the original Reefer Madness, like the one that everyone says is funny from the 30s.
It's not very funny. People oversell that.
Yeah, I always imagine that it probably just plays like a 30s propaganda film, which is likely very fucking boring.
Yeah.
But I do know that this was going to be like a stoner comedy version of it, because of course we're going to mock it to hell. And why wouldn't you? Honestly, I didn't have high hopes for this. I thought it was going to be a really, really dumb stoner comedy, which it kind of is, but there's like enough here that I thought was still decently funny. I really like them making fun of the war on drugs era politics of the 2000s. I thought that was fun. the basically Christian nationalist type guy who's running the whole thing is my favorite character,
as played by Alan Cumming. Floop from Spy Kids himself.
It's a cruel, cruel world, all you little boys and girls, and some mean, nasty people want to have you for their supper. But if you follow me, you can all be free, free, you can all be free. As a bird on a big TV, if you dream, if you dream, if you dream, my dream!
I thought he did a great job, it was very funny. There's enough here. Do I think this is a masterpiece by any means? Absolutely not. But you know what? If you're looking for a goof and a gaff and a laugh, you know, I think it holds up a little bit. You know, I think it's all right.
That's fair. Liz, big thoughts?
I first watched this when I was 15, maybe. I heard about it through like just internet talk, and I was like, this looks stupid and I like Kristen Bell, I'll check it out. And I enjoyed it at the time because, you know, I'm 15, I like stupid shitty drug humor, but then I watch it now and it's like, it's fun. I have a lot of good memories with this, and it's like, it's not life-changing or anything, like it's not the best thing I've ever seen, but it's like 90 minutes of like pretty insane jokes, and it's like you can't not have fun with it at a certain point, especially because the ending goes completely off the rails into another dimension, basically. So, like, it's a ride, but I enjoy it, and I actually enjoy some of the music. Like, genuinely, I actually listen to some of it casually on a playlist I have on Spotify to this day.
What songs? I mean, I know we're not quite in songs, but what songs specifically would you just throw out that you latch onto?
Mary Jane, Mary Lane.
Okay.
I like that one a lot. That's the main one.
The only one that I ever re-listened to is The Stuff, and that's just because I'm a simp for Anna Gasteyer, and truly one of the most underrated performers of the last 50 years. Who else could be a long-lasting SNL member and play Elphaba on Broadway? Like, she can do it all. I love her.
Yeah. I'm with Andrew. This is a fun time. I can knock parts of it, but it's a fun time. Sure, it's a big stoner comedy, but sometimes it's just a fun thing to watch. Like,
I do think that it's a strong opening with the,
yes,
like
Reefer Madness,
with that character and the Reefer Madness song,
the zombies,
and all of that. It's a very strong opening, and then it kind of gets weak, a little bit weaker for the rest of Act One and some of Act Two, and then it really picks up at the end. So you go into it thinking like, oh, this is great. And then it's kind of like you forget the rest, and then the ending, you're like, oh, that was great. So I don't know. It picked the good spots to make it good.
You get gaslit into thinking you're having a lot more fun by the end because it picks up that you forget how meandering it gets in the middle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that there is a lot of that going on. Because in the middle of it, there's like a lot of sections that are just like, this is just the same thing over and over again. You're just saying, oh, they smoke pot, and look at, he's turning evil now. Ha ha.
Yeah.
And I don't know, the joke of pot isn't that bad, so it's funny to watch it be treated like heroin and on par with other addictive substances just eventually becomes making fun of addiction in a way. I don't know, I hate being the fucking fun police here, but it just read to be hollow on this watch in a way that it didn't as much on previous. But I know they're parodying propaganda, which is the framing device, which is very effective and useful.
I also think we live in a time where this is less relevant than it was. I mean, pot is becoming legal in a lot of states. I think it's legal where I'm living. I don't know where you guys are.
It's legal in the state adjacent to mine.
So, like, really, it's not as relevant now. Like, this show doesn't really need to exist anymore. But in 2000 and what? 2001?
2001, 2005 for the movie.
This was like peak war on drugs shit, right?
Mm-hmm. DARE program, all that nonsense.
We're still right in that. So like the idea of like, well, pot is being treated as if it is as bad as these other drugs. Like, imagine if it was like, this isn't real. Ha ha. Like that makes a lot more sense in that context.
You're right, and contextualizing it that way is important, and a little diminishing of me to not do that. A lot of the people that originated in the stage show came over to the movie, and we were mostly talking from the movie. I did also watch a bit of the stage show in a bootleg. Like, Kristen Bell came over from the stage show. So did the gentleman who is Neve Campbell's brother.
Christian Campbell.
Very good. And then we got a lot of other character actors like Alan Cumming. I'm pretty sure in one of the original runs, Stephen Colbert played the propaganda guy, the Alan Cumming role, which would have been very neat to see. That being said, I think that the movie is a more effective way of doing it. Like, as far as a movie version of a goofy parody musical goes, it's pretty good. Like, it's not Little Shop of Horrors level, but I think it's, like, one of the better done ones. Like, the joke isn't dead in it.
It was also a made-for-TV movie.
Showtime.
So it has a Showtime 2005 budget, which shows periodically in some of the scene work when they just stand in front of a big set and don't do anything.
The choreography is rough, and some of the actors trying to, like, you got the pros, like Kristen Bell knows how to work a camera and sing and dance and all that. Neve Campbell looks a little lost at her dance number to a point where they just said, just sit down and watch the other people dance. I can just see it, like, just sit down and watch them dance.
She probably, like, just drove her brother to set one day and's like, do you want to be in the movie? And then they just had her in it.
Well, no, they wanted her for a bigger role, but they couldn't figure out one because all the other female characters would have to have some kind of sexual encounter with the character played by her brother.
That'll do it. That'll do it.
The director is Andy Fickman, who is an interesting figure. He recently directed the Heather's Pro Shot, but he also did such classic films as The Game Plan, She's the Man, Race to Witch Mountain, Kevin Can Wait, Kevin James, and the most important film of all time, and I really do want to say this, Paul Blart Mall Cop 2.
Oh, fuck,
oh my
yes.
God, he's the greatest director of all time.
That's peak.
For The Game Plan alone, he's the greatest director of all time.
Paul Blart, Mall Cop 2, he, like, transcends reality, becomes meta-human.
I've never seen it, but I just assume it's transcendental.
Y'all, do you want to know the only way I've seen Paul Blart, Mall Cop 2?
On a plane?
How?
It syncs perfectly to the Pink Floyd album.
Dark Side of the Moon?
Yes, it syncs up perfectly to that. That was a
Blart Side of the Moon. I've seen that. I have seen that.
That was a McElroy Brothers discovery, and it does sync up ridiculously well, like almost as if they intended it, like better than the Wizard of Oz. I think the Wizard of Oz thing is bullshit. I think there's more legitimacy to Paul Blart Mall Cop 2.
Paul Blart Mall Cop 2, like, the thing is that Pink Floyd actually went forward in time, watched Paul Blart Mall Cop 2, and then they went back and wrote their album.
No. Like,
no.
I think Andy Fickman was like, wouldn't it be really funny?
Nah.
I'm a musical theater guy.
I don't think it was Andy Fickman. I think it was actually Kevin James who went up to Andy Fickman and was like, hey,
Kevin James?
Yes.
Hey,
we should sync the movie.
Kevin James has any ideas at all?
Yes.
Andy, I got an idea for my picture here. This is my second go around. I can't fuck it up this time. They laughed me out for Paul Blart Mall Cop 1, and they laughed me out when I pitched Paul Blart Mall Cop 2. The zookeeper, I thought I had it together. I didn't have it together. They called me B-minus Chris Farley.
Remember when they went to TGI Fridays?
We were just at a costume party. Zookeeper.
Gorilla. Preppy. Gorilla.
Right, and then we noticed there was already a gorilla there, so we were like, you know what, let's put wings on this loser train and get off Fridays on.
You guys know what happens in Pixels, right? When Broadway's Josh Gad falls in love with Q-Bert because Q-Bert becomes a sexy lady because Q-Bert can transform. So he marries Q-Bert, and then because it looks like sexy lady, and they have Q-babies. Q-Bert babies.
No, I did not know any of that information.
This is what happens in this Pixels? Yeah, what are you talking about?
That's one of several things that happens in Pixels.
The only thing I knew about Pixels was Kevin James was the president and Jane Krakowski was married to him inexplicably.
Yeah, that happened.
That's all I knew.
I thought Pixels was like the prequel to Ready Player One.
It basically is, so you're right.
I mean, it is equally as baffling that Chris Columbus directed Pixels as it is that Steven Spielberg directed Ready Player One.
He directed it so that he had the rights to all the characters the writer put in the fucking book.
I feel like he directed Ready Player One to get clout and money to do The Fablemans or something, or Bridge of Spies, or a actual art.
So we went the Sydney Sweeney method of making, like, banking a Madam Web so he could make an Anyone But You at the same time.
It's sad when Anyone But You is a fucking passion project. Like, that is the state of film we are in, when Anyone But You has to fucking be bent over backwards to get made by a big star.
All right. So there's a framing device of the whole entire thing is a presentation for the parents of high schoolers. And there is a movie being shown, and the movie we can assume is The Old Reefer Madness from the 30s.
No, I thought it was literally the plot we're seeing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But, like, yeah. It's supposed to be, like, this is the old propaganda film, but, like, yeah. It's different.
It's also called Tell Your Children, which is an Easter egg nugget, because that's one of the original titles of the 30s version. Tell Your Children.
So there's, everyone has very generic names. It's, like, Jimmy and Mary and Sally, stuff like that. So Jimmy is... a high school kid who's a good Christian boy who loves going to church, and he loves Mary.
He loves
Mary Lane, and they want to go to the dance, but he doesn't know how to dance. So
two left feet
this,
yeah. And then put on yeah, backwards.
He wants to dance for guy. The pre- she wants to dance for the president, but Jimmy's like, no, Mary's not going to like me anymore because I can't dance for the president.
So sleazy guy comes up and is like, I'll teach you to dance. Just come with me, and then. He gets him to try the reefer, and oh my god, he loses his mind. He gets addicted to the reefer instantly, and he starts stealing from churches, and he hates Mary Lane now. But then he realizes the error of his ways and tries to get back with her, but then the sleazy guy shows up again and gives him a brownie, and now he's addicted to it again. Oh my god. But this time Mary Lane follows him, and she tries the reefer and becomes a total whore.
That's whore.
I wouldn't say whore. I'd say a sex fiend, but yes.
I would say whore because that's the movie's language.
That's
Turning
true.
Turning all that is our children language. Into hooligans
and
whores.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you, Alan Cumming.
Thank you.
But then Jimmy shows up and is like, oh no, what did you do to her? And he fights the sleazy guys with the gun, and then they very comically accidentally shoot her.
Also, to clarify, this is a different sleazy guy than the previous sleazy guy that was mentioned before.
No, is it?
No, it's
Ralph. It was the same one.
No, it's Ralph that ends up.
No, he's fighting with over the gun.
Oh, he's fighting with a bunch of sleazy people. Yeah,
but then Mary Jane rapes Ralph.
Mary Jane basically rapes Ralph, or Mary Lane.
Mary dies. Jimmy is. Framed for it, and then all the sleazy people in the house fight each other, and it doesn't go well, but one of the sleazy girl at the house finally grows a pair and tells on tattletales on the guy.
No, she murders
to the president
murders
of the United
him
States.
With a garden
no, she murders
hoe.
Him.
She murders him with a garden hoe, but then she also tattletales on him.
Well, she goes to the president's like, hey, this guy actually murdered Mary, not the guy you're about to execute. Can you give him a pardon? And the president's like, totally.
And makes a reference to Annie.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does, because it's FDR.
Yeah.
And then they almost sing the Annie song, but they don't.
No, they sing a different song about being an American.
Yeah. And then it ends. Oh, wait, no. Mary shows back up as an angel.
Oh, yeah.
And he says, maybe I'll die.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Basically, you know, they burn the pot field in the back of the house, and then Mary is no longer a sex slave to the devil because they burned the pot. And now she's an angel who can go to heaven.
And hang out Jesus.
And then then Jimmy's like, someday I'll join you after I get hit by a bus or something.
Or I got cancer. And then,
yeah, and then it ends. So it's obviously a very goofy, like, satirical plot of just about, it's supposed to be like propaganda where it's extremely simplistic and dumb. And I think for what it is, it works in that way. I do like some of the gags. I really love the Jesus gag where Jesus shows up and sings, yeah. But he's too lame to fight the reefer.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
I mean, how is Jesus supposed to compete with some pot, yeah. You know?
Also, if Robert Torrey was playing Jesus and I encountered him, I would also bang him. So, like...
Can't blame him.
I would bang Jesus.
I feel like most of the gags are fairly one note, but the actors elevated a lot. However, there's just some things where they're playing on the racism of the time. There's a lot of anti-Asian jokes about, like, selling a baby to be eaten by an Asian man.
Yeah, I did notice that. Yeah, that was
that
very,
is
like...
just not, it's bad. It's real bad.
And it feels, I mean, they do kind of highlight it weirdly, because when that happens in the movie, within a movie, we cut to the parent teachers and the one Asian parent just kind of sinks in her seat. So that almost feels like they're so close to something there.
I think it's supposed to be a joke about that, but I feel like the way it was executed felt a little bit off. It wasn't quite obvious enough that what they were doing. Although that might just be because we're a lot more sensitive to that now than we were in 2001.
I mean, we're woke. We're too woke. We woke culture.
Dude, has this podcast gone woke, bro?
Are we woke now?
I liked you guys before, but now you talk about politics every episode.
Are we a DEI podcast, bro?
What's DEI even
what
stand
does that
for?
Mean?
I see it. Dick eating instruction.
Diversity, equity, inclusion.
Oh, diversity, oh. Equity, inclusion. Oh.
It means the same thing as woke, essentially. It's just the new woke.
It's like how everyone has replaced the F slur with cuck. Like, the way that people in the early 2000s were just throwing around the F slur, now they just replace it with cuck all the time. And I just want to... We're all in a circle, and then eventually the cucks will find a way to...
It's really ridiculous. It just makes me want to... It makes me want to sit in a chair and watch my wife do something with another man. You know? It's just... That's how mad I get about it.
You know?
And I have to be dressed as Superman.
Or as Robert Torrey Jesus, who's like half naked.
But they can't address me. If they address that I'm here, it doesn't do it. It doesn't work for me.
That's literally that's literally part of the subplot of Follow the House of Usher. Is one of the Usher kids is a cuck fan.
A kid?
No, she's an adult at this point, but she Yeah, no, but she basically makes her husband hang out with sex workers as like in a loving relationship, and she gets off on watching other people be in love. It's the weirdest cuck dynamic ever.
My favorite cuck of all time is Danny from The Room.
I just like to watch you guys.
Danny is a cuck.
I just want to watch you
he
guys.
He just likes to watch.
He just likes to watch.
I think we should talk about the reviews for the fucking musical we're talking about.
Yeah, Ben Brantley reviewed this all the way back in 2001. Why don't you give that a read, Andrew?
Ben Brantley reviewed this?
Yes, he did.
Doesn't he have better things to do?
He reviewed the stage version, I'm assuming,
yes,
right?
He did.
Okay, I was going to say.
He had a very Jess approach to it.
Ben Brantley, according to recent reports, irony is finished in American pop culture. Now you know this wasn't written nowadays, because holy fuck,
no.
Everything is just ironic now.
I think the internet brought back irony for better and for worse.
For worse.
For worse. For worse, not for better.
We're on like the eighth layer of irony now, where now we're like serious, but in an ironic way. You know, whatever. Irony is ironic. I'm ironically ironic sometimes, you know, ironically.
Like, when we bring up Doug Walker, we're not being sincere about him.
We're not?
Have we circled back to being sincere?
I feel like we say that we hate him, though, and then we talk about him.
And we talk about him for, like, 15
Isn't
minutes straight. And then we, like, don't cut it from the episode.
Sometimes we cut it from the episode.
Yeah, that's true.
Bree used to cut him almost every time. Andrew lingers and doubles it.
Oh, of course.
That makes a lot of sense.
I had the theme song.
Yeah.
I had the theme song every time he's brought up.
Oh, God, that Kick-Ass episode is going to be a nightmare. It's just going to be like the theme song underneath the whole thing.
According to recent reports, irony is finished in American pop culture. Then again, even more recent reports suggest that irony has already managed a furtive comeback. There is yet further evidence, however, to be found at the Variety Arts Theater that at least one extreme form of the ironic arts, its flashiest and silliest incarnation known as camp, is indeed ready for the last rites.
This show killed camp, according to Ben Brantley.
Ben Brantley doesn't know what camp means. Oh my God.
The latest source of speculation on the fate of the arch exaggeration and taking in quotation marks is an industriously ineffective musical, Reefer Madness. It officially, and if you must, ironically, opened last night in Greenwich Village, the neighborhood where theatrical camp came to flower most lavishly. The creators of the musical version of Reefer Madness, which itself became a cult hit in Los Angeles several years ago, have simply decided to exaggerate the exaggerations, the excesses to which marijuana smokers are prone, now to cannibalism, heavy-duty sadomasochism, and
orgiastic
epiphanies, alternatively starring a goat-like Satan and Jesus. Our first vision of this dangerous tribe presents its members as something like the resurrected corpses from the Michael Jackson video for Thriller. Yeah, they're zombies. Okay. They do the air claws. Another. Okay.
Yeah.
This is lame. This is bad. This is
this
a, bad,
is a
review.
Bad review.
How about we just skip to the last bit? The approach of Reefer Madness, and this includes the Baroque CD sets by Walt Spangler and costumes by Dick Magnetti, is so catch-all that it suffocates in its own bloatedness. A scantily clad usherette regularly sashays across the stage, bearing placards with grim animations. One of them reads, "Reefer makes you giggle for no good reason." The show's creators have obviously hoped to create a similar effect without artificial stimuli, but the natural highs are few. Okay. What a prick, right?
I feel like
that's...
I feel like he doesn't get it.
He doesn't get it.
I don't think he knows what camp is, or he never really liked camp to begin with.
I think camp...
Because a lot of the stuff he's talking about here is just like, that's just what this is. Like, yeah, it's intentionally really goofy and over the top. Like, that's what they were going for.
Also, camp is one of those terms that have just become nebulous and don't have a definition at this point. Like, camp changes definition with everything it's referenced within. Like, there's no definitive camp movie at this point.
Yeah, there's. It's called Camp. It stars Anna Kendrick.
Anyway, I mean, you can make the argument that Mommy Dearest is the definitive camp movie of all time, but that is so, like, it could be camp, but there's, it's so many other movies are considered camp that aren't like Mommy Dearest, so what the fuck is camp? Like, that's a different podcast. I'm not going to get into it.
Like, the fact that people don't know what camp is anymore goes to show if we use a word too much, does it lose its meaning?
Yeah.
Like, it's cuck. Like,
yeah. It's like how the Met Gala camp thing became such a weird thing because no one knew what the fuck to wear. So it just became a disaster online, at least.
What we're saying is Ben Brantley doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about, and neither do we. But you know what? How about we go into a mid-show and talk about some of these songs? Hey guys, sorry to interrupt you in the middle of the show, but we've got a shill at you. Today's show is brought to you by the extremely kind donations by our donors over at Patreon. Take it away, Andrew. I gotta smoke this doobie.
Our current patrons are Melissa Goldman, Danielle Renix, Justice Stampede, Ewan Cassidy, Monica Thoreau, Brent Black, Nathaniel Stacey Coombe, Joseph Evans Green, Mary Lou Choquette, John Van Alles, Russ Walker, Musical Hell, Emily Gracie, Kyle Summers, Janae C., Scootin' the Techno Horror Dreamcoat, Nothing is Certain Except Beth and Taxis, Thespian, Mitchell Young, Chai Teacup, Chris Marcote, Keisha Marie Anastasio, Trevi Joseph, RJ Nariga, Julia McLannan, Bjorn Hermans, Toriana Frazier, Sammy the Adequate Amount Jacobson, Kaylee Blazier, Villainous Miss, Sophina Ali, The Omega Geek, Paige Pearson, Maddie Wargle, Care Bear Cub, Elisa Erdman, Annie Loskatova, Sarah Den Blaker, Evan Ball, Zachary Torres, Rora Morasso, Mara Forloin, Lisa L, Possessed Washing Machine, Nick Roten, Puffy Boy, Sydney Hicks, Annabelle, Billy Clifton, Gold-Plated Kikimora, Julia Balder's Daughter, Emma, Grace, and Kara Balda.
You all I get sucked a pot in too brownie. Much.
I sucked in too much pot. I'm going to throw up and die. But they give us financial support that helps us keep the lights on here. Musicals with Cheese. If you'd like to join them in supporting us and get tons of fun perks, such as an extra 10 minutes at the top of this episode that did not make the edit, and it's actually good discussion that we had, come check us out on Patreon because you're missing out. Also, you get meetups and hangouts. You get our Discord chat. You can get a bunch of access to bootlegs and all that jazz. So come join the fun, kids. Let's get back to the show. The opening number, Reefer Madness, is engaging, strong, and shows the kind of tone which is darkly satiric.
Reefer Madness, Reefer Madness.
Oh, so mad. See the kits, precious kits. Yes, their heads are on the chopping block, and someone's got to dare to take a stand. Can't ignore anymore. It could be your son or daughter with a deadly stick of reefer in the hand. Heading straight for
Reefer Madness, Reefer Madness, Reefer Madness, Reefer Madness.
Save our kids. Stealthy as a socialist, it slithers up our shores,
turning all our children into hooligans and whores.
Smoking bowl of evil bears the choking stench of sin. It burrows like a weevil under tender Christian skin. This!
Reefer Madness, Reefer Madness, Reefer Madness, Reefer Madness, oh so mad.
I really like Reefer Madness. I think I already said that this is my favorite character, my favorite part of the show. I think it's goofily over the top. I love the propaganda element to it and how it leads into it. And I think that the zombies and everything, it's fun. This is a great opening, and I wish that the whole show was as strong as this.
Yeah.
Sadly, it's just kind of not. But, you know, this is a great starting point.
I am baffled by Alan Cumming's. I can't even tell if it's a good American accent, because I know he can do a good American accent, but this is too big, and you know, America is incredible, and you all must really like this stuff. Like, it is a very kind of pointed accent, and I can't get out of my head his weird Scottish brogue he really has underneath it all.
Yeah, I watched The Traitors on Peacock, and I'm so used to him being Scottish, it freaked me out to hear him not be Scottish.
Hello, everybody, I am Alan Cumming. He has a very, very weird accent.
He could be going for, like, an exaggerated voice thing, like a old-timey, like, Jimmy Stewart movie actor type of thing, and it's just coming off weird because we know he's Scottish, so it's, like, sounds extra fake, you know?
Yeah, I extra artificial.
Yeah, it's like the movie star voice is already artificial, but he's putting on an American accent and then doing character work within a fake accent. Like
when we watched Schmigadoon, did he have like a weird American accent? I don't think so. I'm trying to remember what his voice.
I don't remember much of Schmigadoon, if I'm being perfectly honest with you. Sorry, people. It didn't hit with me a ton.
go re-listen to those episodes.
Yeah, listen to those episodes. We have fresher thoughts.
Yeah. Then we have Romeo and Juliet, the main. I actually think the song's really clever in its own idea of two people singing about how they're just like Romeo and Juliet, but they haven't made it to the end, so they don't know what happens. But they're sure they'll end up happily ever after.
Are you trying to woo me, Jimmy Harper?
I need words to tell you about my pounding heart. $4 words that make a guy sound smart. Well, I guess that's why they invented Shakespeare. His articulations of a lover's palpitations are so keen. My bounty is as boundless as the sea.
Oh.
my love as deep the more I give to thee.
Oh, you sound so dreamy when you talk like Shakespeare.
A big vocabulary should be customary when you fall in love. La 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 la, you're a snowy dove.
La la la, prodigious birth of love.
La 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 la, hip hooray for Shakespeare. Sure as I am breathing, you can make Elizabethan language fun.
It's funny, but this song isn't like, it doesn't bring the funny like Reefer Madness does, you know?
No.
I think it's a silly premise, especially with the Taylor Swift comparison. which I don't remember when her song came out, but it was definitely after this.
2011 2010.
I wonder if she watched this and had an idea.
Marry me, Juliet. I love the way they say Shakespeare. They hit the aches really hard. Like la 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 la, hip hop hooray for Shakespeare. Like the accent, the intentionality on that really brings out the really childlike nature of these two characters. It's really funny. And this is where the lyrics really do shine for me, where there's a lot of, you know, fun little Shakespearean references within this that are subtle and playing off, and I like it. This is my kind of shit. Like, they rhyme Shakespeare with, like, what yonder window breaks here. I think they're funny. I like it.
Also, it's funny because the prologue literally says they're going to die. So,
isn't that great?
Yeah, the prologue literally says these two are going to fucking die. This is not love. And they're like, no, 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 that's love.
Yes.
And they didn't read the prologue.
Yeah, they didn't know.
They should have read prologue, their scripts. So, like, no wonder. Proluge, I think she said.
Proluge. Then there's the stuff, May's song, which I also like this one. Like, I like the general songs in their lyrics. The lyrics are very funny. And the way that this is shot, you know, from the director of Paul Blart Mall Cop 2, I would have expected zero laughs, but there's some good laughs as far as the editing and the placement and the actual frame is happening. Yeah. That is all the songs I have any interest in talking to about. Anything you guys got?
I want to talk about the brownie song.
Yes, I was going to say, the brownie song.
This brownie is yummy. It's the greatest brownie known to man. It's chewy, it's nutty. This brownie's really good. Don't offer me a macaroon. My brownie suits me fine. There's frosting on the top, and best of all, it's mine.
Eat the brownie, eat the brownie. Eat the brownie, eat the brownie.
So, I want to talk about the brownie song not because I like it, but because this is the low point in the whole thing for me. this is like the type of stoner comedy that I despise. In the movie specifically, I mean, because they do this like dumb like animated segment that is meant to look like a stoner animation, and I just hate stoner animation. I'm sorry.
You're not a big fan of Ren and Stimpy or Beavis and Butthead and shit like that?
Absolutely not. And I think like Tenacious D music videos that look like this are fucking awful. I'm just not a fan.
That's part of the reason. Okay, recently we got requested in our Patreon Discord to cover Tenacious D. And that is another one I struggle with because it is just so much stoner humor. And that's just not my shit. That's just... Mm-hmm.
I think Tenacious D is like, there's some funny stuff, but there's also just like a lot of like, yeah, just dumb stoner humor that's just not great.
It's meandering, and because time feels different when you're stoned, allegedly, you don't really care because you're like, oh my god, I don't know what's going on anyway.
But the brownie song is, it's a particularly not funny song to me, and the fact that they tried to make it funny by using this crap stoner animation just... It really hits home that this is not for me.
Yeah.
This particular number.
Yeah.
And it's not done like that on stage. I want to add that. It obviously.
Of course. Yeah, of course not.
That is
yeah.
a movie choice. It's just a song called The Brownie Song. And I think it's more monkey based in the movie. Liz, what about you? Anything else you want to talk about before we wrap this up?
I won't be long. Lonely Pew is a weird song to me because I think pew is a weird ass word. Why would you write a song called Lonely Pew? Pew is a weird word.
It rhymes. That's why.
That's all my thoughts in the Lonely Pew song. It's fine otherwise. I just think pew is a weird word. I know. I'm Rosary's Catholic, so I know the word too well.
And it's spelt the way like pew 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 too.
Yeah, it's very weird. I think Listen to Jesus, Jimmy may have changed my life when I was a teenager because I hated being Catholic.
I floated down from heaven when I heard a lamb had strayed. Look at you, your brain has turned to marmalade. I'm here to help you, Jimmy, and return you to the fold. Try filling your lungs with God and not Jamaican gold. Satan's bold, loves to lie. Don't reply. Do you wanna make the angels cry? Come straight from the Madonna.
Listen to Jesus, Jimmy.
I'm the face on the shroud of Turel.
Listen to Jesus, Jimmy.
Do I need to test your urine?
Wait, what about that song specifically made you feel rebellious?
Because it was making fun of Catholics, basically, yeah. Kind of. Also, I just like that song because Robert Torti, and I think he pulls it off. And the last thing I'll say is Mary J. Mary Lane, I enjoy a ton. I think just the way it builds and the way the chorus is just, Mary Lane, Mary Jane, they did that clearly on purpose, and I think it's really clever, even if it's stupid.
You crumpled me like cellophane. You stir me up like beef chow mein. You wreck me, Mary Jane. Mary Jane, oh Mary Jane. You've conquered me like Charlemagne. Pleasure intertwined with pain. You wreck me, Mary Jane. Your toxic kisses make my heart race faster than a cheetah. I've been stapled and spindled, my willpower's dwindled. Melt resistance down like hot Velveeta. Mary Jane, oh Mary Jane, flush my future down the drain. Smear me like a ketchup stain. But I need you, I love you, I'm loved by Mary.
Love by Mary, love by Mary, love by Mary Lane. Love by Mary, love by Mary, love by Mary Lane. Love by Mary, love by Mary, love by Mary Lane.
There's only room for one Mary in my life. Mary Lane, with an L. For love, I love Mary Lane.
Love by Mary, love by Mary, love by Mary Lane.
And I think having all the characters come in and sing the chorus at the end is kind of cute. Yeah.
It also gets into reprise hell near yes. the end of the show, where the jokes that I didn't find funny the first time, I really don't find funny the second time.
Well, also the, like, cannibalism suddenly enters the plot. So
I'm just so out. I want it to end truly at that point where I'm like, I wrap it up. I feel like this is a 90 minute movie in like an hour 45 minute box. But yeah, so I don't think I'd ever watch this again. I feel like I do want to talk about Down at the Old Five and Dime just to shit on Neve Campbell a bit more.
Okay.
Nev Candle, not a musical theater performer, looks a little lost, probably did this as a favor to her brother, who is, by all accounts, a very effective theater performer and hits all these notes, does all these dances, and is really fun in the movie. The performances are great. And someone else I really wanted to highlight, Kristen Bell, do shit like this again. I don't need to see you as Anna and Frozen until the day you die. Please just do some weird shit again.
Yeah, go back to some Good Place stuff. Like, do the Good Place, basically.
Even Good Place, I struggle with, because they try to frame her as, like, this white trash girl, when I look at her, and I just see, like, you know, a good girl go bad. Like, that is the narrative that fits right for the face she has, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I didn't have that experience with a Good Place, but, like, that's just me.
Like, I always imagine what the Good Place would have been like if she was, that character was played by, like, a Kristen Ritter or someone a little bit edgier.
I also think the character becoming a good person is kind of critical, too. So maybe having Kristen Bell be that is also, like, one of the reasons.
I mean, it just felt like Disney synergy brain to my head. Where I'm like, oh, she's kind of big right now. She can nail a joke, and she can.
But to my
brain,
do all those things. I thought the casting was good. But I also can't imagine the cast changing at all. I think that cast is perfect in my brain.
What is our overall thoughts on Reefer Madness and our cheese ratings? Andrew, you're up first.
I think Reefer Madness is fine for what it is. It's a funny stoner comedy from the 2000s as a musical. And I don't think it is aspiring to be more than that. And I think that it's fine at doing that. Is this like a must-see? Absolutely not. But if you're looking to just have a laugh and you're getting high, which this is probably even better. So, you know, I think it's fine. It is not inoffensive, but if you know what comedies from the 2000s are like, you know what to expect here.
You know what? I didn't hear a single F slur.
Yeah.
That's true.
Bare minimum, kids.
Just some rape and racism.
As far as a cheese rating, I think I have to give it cheese puffs, because you gotta get those munchies out of the way. They were eating apples as munchies.
Yeah,
just fucking bizarre.
No, you don't want to eat junk when you're high, not apples.
I'm just like, aren't these guys high on pot? Why do they want to eat apples?
Yeah,
couldn't think of a snack that was time period.
I think also.
If you frame it from a propaganda film of people that have never been high, that is a funny idea.
Also, the weird thing is,
like, I'm so hungry. Apple.
So the weird thing is, like, the main character says he's been gaining weight from all the pot, and it's like, all you've been eating is apples. How many apples are you eating? Like, when your finger is fat. Anyway.
Maybe he just has, like, other issues.
Maybe it's just other shit going on. I don't know.
It's a tumor that he's got that'll bring him home to Kristen
his
Bell.
His glass ring. Ugh.
Yeah, Liz, you're up.
I will admit, I do have some nostalgia-coated glasses on this thing from when I was a teenager and was, like, discovering weird little musicals no one was talking about. So, like, I enjoy this quite a bit. It's what it is. It's a stoner comedy from the 2000s. It's not gonna, like, change your life or anything. But if you're, like, have some friends over and you got some, you're a little high and you're just looking for something stupid to watch, like, this is a good choice. Like, sure, there's some shit in there that I have issues with fundamentally, but other than that, like, it's fine. And I'm going to give it a cheese rating from my time going to one of the top five pot colleges in the country. Domino's Pizza. True. I did want to go to one of the top five pot schools in the country for college.
So, like, Domino's cheese sticks or, like, the cheese pizza or,
oh,
like,
Domino's
what?
Cheese pizza with cheese sticks as well. Because there's a lot of you and you're all high. So I once got extra credit for going to class on 420.
That's hilarious.
Is true.
Will this release on 420? I did not mean for this. Hold up.
You didn't mean for this?
No.
I thought this was on purpose.
No, this was a total accident.
I could we could release this next week instead of the other one, yeah. And it would be out for 420, though.
It'd be out I on think 420, that and then we could promote God it on 420.
We don't reference anything from the last episode, do we?
No, we don't reference anything. Cool. Because nothing's connected. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. Let's do it. Yay. So Domino's, man, Domino's Pizza has a really salty memory in my brain because we fed one of our cast members of the film at least 7 slices of Domino's Pizza because they had to keep eating it for a scene. And
oh, no.
They were a small person. And at the beginning, they looked like this. And at the end, they had like an obvious gut of where the pizza was. It was.
Oh, God.
I'd never seen that before in my life. It was fascinating.
What was the pizza we had when we watched the Grease movie?
It looked really good.
That was Little Caesars. Michigan-born Little Caesars.
I've never had Little Caesars. It's not in my area. What?
See, so Little Caesars is better than Domino's. That settles the debate right there.
Yeah.
Next time you both are in Michigan, I want to take you to a couple other places. Like,
well, next
there's a few.
First time for me, but
it'll be soon, I hope.
Yeah.
Because I know Andrew's going to put some roller coasters on the wheel, so.
Ooh.
Oh, that would be fun. I haven't thought of doing that yet, but that would be fun to do.
That would be fun.
I feel like just
I do have a thing with
like
big height drop, so if it's a big height drop, like straight down, I will not go on it.
That's fine. Whatever.
What if we make you?
I won't do it
gun
anyway.
Point.
I will bring my boyfriend with me, and he will defend me and protect me.
It's gonna be like the end of a Vacation. We're gonna be bringing you through the theme park with a gun to your head.
Oh, I have not seen this movie. I don't know what you're referring to.
John Candy.
You ever seen Vacation?
I've never seen National Lampoon's Vacation.
It's not that good. I feel like people overrate
it's
that
it
one.
It isn't that good.
I haven't even seen Christmas Vacation,
but
like genuinely. I've never seen Christmas Vacation.
Christmas Vacation
my
is better.
My family has made me watch Christmas Vacation every fucking year for like 10 years straight. So I refuse to ever watch it
my
again.
My mom does the same thing, but with Love Actually.
That sounds
my dad
a lot
watches
worse.
The Polar Express nonstop, beginning to end, from November 1st to December 30th.
Is your dad okay?
I think he just likes
trains.
Is your dad
Tom Hanks?
Yes, your dad just Tom Hanks. Is really
no,
his
I
life.
Really just think he likes trains. If you want me to really...
You know, there's a lot of different other movies with trains in them, right? You could just show your dad.
Does Polar Express involve Tom Hanks saving one person?
Yes, I'm pretty sure.
No,
he saves the one little boy!
He almost throws the little girl off the train, too.
Yeah, but that's not part of the theory we've crafted.
Well, when we say
Tom Hanks
saved.
Is allowed to kill other people.
Yeah.
Like, that happens in Saving Private Ryan. He needs to save one person.
He needs
he
to save the one little
died.
Boy.
Road to Perdition is literally about him saving the one little boy. Polar Express is about him saving the soul of that one little boy.
No, he's saving the Christmas spirit of the one little boy.
He doesn't believe in Santa God, so he has to save him.
Or Santa Jesus, depending on how you feel.
Reefer Madness. It's fine. It's just fine, you guys.
Jess is really mad.
He's so mad about
Jess
it.
Jess is really
Jess,
mad about Reefer Madness of all things.
So I am giving it hooligan cheese from Cato Corner Farm because turning all our children into hooligans and whores.
So you
Sneaky
can find
like
whore cheese?
Communist.
You couldn't find whore cheese on Google?
Couldn't find cheese. Actually, is there a whore cheese? Because if so.
You might have changed a whore cheese.
There's a cheese whore t-shirt.
Cheese whore.
Cheese whore.
Like a total cheese whore.
That's so funny.
Okay, my official cheese rating is hooligan and whore. Cheese.
So hooligan cheese while wearing a shirt that says total
cheese
whore.
Yes, because that's as close as I'm getting.
Good luck, Juliet, getting that transcribed so it makes sense.
And Juliet, I'm surprised you still listen at this point. Gotta be honest.
Also, to clarify, mine is Domino's cheese pizza with cheese sticks on the side.
But it's gotta be cheese stuffed crust.
Cheese stuffed crust as well, because we're all really way
Andrew,
too freaking high on New York weed.
Had you had Little Caesars before that? I'm sorry to go back to an old conversation.
I'm pretty sure that was the first time I've ever had Little Caesars.
Wow. Yeah, Little Caesars is good. It's good because it's $5 per full pizza.
Really?
Yeah, they have a thing called Hot and Ready where you show up and no matter what, they have pizzas ready, and they're always $5.
I get ads for Little Caesars like on TV, but I do not know if there's one near me at all. Like, I cannot find one.
And when the Batman was coming out, they made a Batman calzone with the Batussi.
Oh, I remember that. That was all over Twitter.
And I ate it and watched Barb and Star, which is a much better weed movie. Honestly, if you're getting high and watching a movie, go watch Barb and Star.
Go to Vista Del Mar. Movie.
This is a 5 out of 10 movie. Speaking of 10 out of 10s, thank you guys for listening. Please follow us on iTunes and Spotify. What's your cheese rating? Leave us a little notice there on Spotify. We're on Twitter at Cheesy Musicals, Patreon Musicals Cheese, Instagram Musicals Cheese, YouTube page Musicals Cheese, Patreon only podcast, Patreon with Cheese. Email us at musicaltheaterlizard@gmail.com. Our keeper of the cheese is Juliet Antonio. Listen to Jesus, Juliet. This show is edited by Andrew DeWolf. The show is researched and produced by Liz Esten. Our themes were created by Robin Nash of IOU Music UK. Thank you to the Broadway Podcast Network for having us on the platform and for not kicking us off for promoting the federal crime of marijuana usage.
Depending on what state you're in.
Yeah. It's always a federal crime.
It is always a federal crime.
That's true.
Yeah. I remember once Andrew called Michael Salazar or Michael whoever from Be More Chill a federal
George
criminal.
Salazar?
Yeah, the one that
gave
me COVID.
Oh, the guy who gave you COVID. Yes.
Yes.
Oh, a federal criminal because he smoked a weed.
Yeah, he smoked a weed. There's still a Tumblr post that quotes that. Every time we Google musicals of cheese, someone's like, that Tumblr post comes up. I'm like, okay.
Oh, damn.
And I do get the odd email referencing a episode from like 4 or 5 years ago, and I'm just like, fuck, we said that. You once had all the brains, now they're just carpet stains. You're in no shape to fight my beard to make things right, cause there's blood on your necktie, your copus is delicti, and you've been delivered from the stuff.
Man, what's the matter with that cat there?
Must be full of reefer.
Full of reefer?
Yeah, man.
Mean that cat's high?
Sailing lightly.
Get away from here.
Man, is that the reefer, man?
That's the reefer, man.
I believe he's losing his mind.
I think he's lost his mind.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.